Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. On today's show, we'll be talking about doing photography with limited vision.
Tammy Ruggles is a photographer who got started in the art after her vision had diminished significantly. We'll speak with her about how the advent of digital photography has eliminated the need to work in a darkroom and also made it possible to edit the photos even with low vision. Learn how she successfully puts these tools together. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip came from the end of our conversation with Tammy. Great. Oh, thank you so much.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Yes, ma'am.
Have a good time.
You know, we get so sick and tired of people with visual impairments being told, oh, you can't do that. You can't see well enough. But, you know, anybody who sees your photographs and hears your story about how little you can see, I think hopefully it'll inspire somebody else to attempt to do the same thing or to do something else that's their passion that they've been told that they can't do just because they can't see well enough.
Yeah, and sometimes I impose those limitations on myself, and I don't know why I have done that. Maybe it's because I've heard other people say that so often. But try to lift those limitations off of yourself. Think about what you can do and not what you can't.
And those are attitudes that we've certainly reinforced over the years in this program. You know, many people will tell blind people, you can't do this, you can't do that. You may even tell yourself that, gee, this could be hard, or I may not be able to do it. But, you know, if you really want to do it, there is usually a creative way to overcome the odds and do what you want to do.
And we even named the show in the spirit of that attitude, that you can be successful if you try hard enough.
Support for Eyes on Success is provided by
eSight, maker of digital eyewear designed to help improve vision for people with low vision and legal blindness. The technology can be used to read, see faces, and explore the world. More information is available at eSightEyewear.com.
And by
CrowdViz, an iPhone application that gives blind users the ability to receive visual assistance from a team of sighted individuals by connecting to them through a video stream. The app is available at the Apple App Store. Let's start by meeting Tammy Ruggles.
Yes, my name is Tammy Ruggles, and I live in a small town called Tollsboro in northern Kentucky along the Ohio River. I'm a photographer. I'm legally blind. I've had RP since I was born, and that is a retinal disease that progressively worsens as time goes by. But it didn't really stop me from trying to be an artist. I was drawing at 12 and writing poems and short stories and things like that.
Now, you did have vision when you were younger, and I assume your vision slowly progressed and got worse with time. Can you describe the progression to our listeners?
Yes, I've had better vision. When I was two, though, I had my first pair of glasses, and the Office for the Blind has been involved off and on through my life, like helping me with accessibility devices and getting through college and things. But with my first pairs of glasses when I was a little girl, I could, you know, read books and stuff as long as it was close enough. I could hold my books up close and read them, and had to sit close to the TV so that I could still see it and sit in the front row of school, you know, to see the blackboard. And second grade, I was in a sight-saving school, which, you know, was a really small class, and that the textbooks had large print. And I kind of liked that because other people, everyone in there had classes, you know, just like I did. So we were all kind of alike in that way. But then as I grew in my teenage years, I was still drawing by then. I took art in high school and college. I majored in social work, got a degree in that. And when I was 40, my vision had decreased to the point where my eye doctor said I was legally blind. And I had been doing social work for 10 years.
And how did you react to that information?
That's when I had a major wake-up call. It's like, no, it's not just bad eyes you have. It's RP. You know, hadn't really heard those words till then. So that kind of threw me upside down a little bit as far as what to do with my life and what the future held, and I really wasn't sure. And the only thing I knew I could do was write as a hobby, though. I never did it professionally. I thought, well, I'll give it a try. I have nothing to lose. So my writing career started then. That was 2001.
You gave up the social work, I take it, then?
I wouldn't say gave up. I would say it was more like forced retirement. I didn't give it up. I was in child protection, adult protection, foster care, and elderly. And in that particular job, you have to drive. And because I could not drive any longer due to being legally blind, it presented a burden to the office. That's how I lost my job.
So you were unable to do the job, and you decided to transition into something else.
Yeah, right. I couldn't fulfill the duties required anymore.
Because they were unwilling to provide a driver for you?
Well, they did to a certain degree, and then they gave me three options. They said, you can just quit, you can transfer to another county, or I could retire with benefits. So since I had a son to raise, I chose the retirement with benefits. And they said, your last day is April the 6th, 2001.
So what did you do then to fill up your time? You were still pretty young.
Oh, well, that was the issue there. I was a mom, so I was raising my son and started writing. I turned to writing after I had to retire. I didn't know what to do, really. I figured if one job turned me down, another social work job would as well. And I had applied for other social work jobs, but I never heard back from them. So I turned to writing, and it has worked out. I've been a freelance writer since then.
And what type of material do you write? Where is it available?
Well, if you just put my name in the search engine, you'll come up with all kinds of results, like Chicken Soup for the Soul. I wrote for them some short stories, and I have written tons of magazine articles, how-to parenting, children's books, and I do some of the cover art, or did some of the cover art for them.
It sounds like fun.
Yes, it was a blast. I love writing just as much as art.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
This week's focus topic is how Tammy got started and continues to enjoy doing photography with very limited vision.
Today we wanted to talk about doing photography as a visually impaired person. I understand your interest in photography started when you were young, but you ran into some difficulties due to the technologies at the time.
Yes. Well, there's a picture I have that my family had of me when I was about 5, and I have a camera around my neck. So I always had an interest in it. And growing up, into my early teenage years, I wanted to do it in a fine art kind of way. And I thought, gosh, the biggest photographer I knew was Ansel Adams, and I wanted to be like him. But I couldn't, because with RP, you know, there's night blindness. And I could not see in the dark room and read the settings on my camera and things that you have to do, like mechanicals and stuff. And I thought, well, I can't do that kind of photography, so I'll just use a basic disposable camera throughout the years and just pictures of my family, just little casual shots, you know, nothing artistic or major professionally or anything.
I gather that in more recent years, you've gotten into some much more involved photography than just simple family snapshots.
2013 rolled around, and point-and-shoot cameras, you know, they were out before then, but that's when I became aware of them. It was 2013, of how easy, I was hearing how easy they were to use and how there wasn't any developing involved. And because you used to, you know, you either had to develop them yourself or send them off to a lab, you know, to get developed. But with the digital, it does it for you. So I got my first one, and I was a little hesitant at first because I didn't know. Like, I'm legally blind now. I can't see very well. Everything is extremely blurry. What? Why am I doing this? But the artist in me said, go on, try it. So I did, and, you know, it's worked out.
So if you can't see very well, how do you deal with your images?
I have use my 47-inch computer monitor to do the photography, and I don't really see very well what I'm shooting. I mean, I might see the general shape of something, or if I get up really close to like a flower or something that's right in front of me, I can see it a little bit better to shoot it. But when I'm shooting something off at the distance, it's like a guessing game until I get it on my computer where it's enlarged. And if anybody ever uses one out there that in your audience, then you'll know what I'm talking about. You can enlarge something, let's say a pebble can become 2 feet tall on your monitor. So I can see better on my monitor. And that's how I do photography.
On your camera, most digital cameras these days have a screen that's maybe 2, 3, 4 inches diagonal. Is that too small for it to be of any use to you?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So you just look at the general scene and assume what's going to end up in the picture because you've learned how big of a field you get?
I don't use that little screen. It may as well be black because it's just nothing. It's just a blur, like everything else is a blur. I can't really see what's on that screen. I just know that if I walk around in my backyard, I come up really close to a tree, and I see the branch standing dark against the light sky. I was like, okay, I know from my art education, to me, that looks appealing, so I'll try to take a picture of it. And then the other way I take pictures is, like I said, the distance ones where I'm riding along in the car, and I will just snap. I literally just randomly snap, and when I get my camera back and transfer my photos, that's where I see the ones I want to keep. I've got a lot of pictures, yes, but I throw away way more than I keep.
Don't we all?
Yeah, I do. I really do.
So I'm curious. I'm fully sighted and Pete's blind, and I use a point-and-shoot camera, which frankly isn't as new as yours, so it probably doesn't autofocus quite as intelligently as yours. But I find, you know, if I've got a person in the field and then the background is in the distance, it sometimes isn't so smart about which one it focuses on. And in particular, if I hand the camera to somebody else and say, can you take a picture of the two of us, they inevitably get it wrong.
Huh.
Is your camera just intelligent enough that it always gets the focus right because it's newer than mine? Or do you have tricks?
It might be the camera because I definitely do not see well enough to focus anything. I don't manually focus. I have it set on Superior Auto, which is why I love my Sony RX100. That's what I use. And I set it on there and just point and shoot. I do not focus or see very well if it's clear. And a lot of times, you know, I don't know what I've got till I get it on my screen. So all of that choosing comes later. Like you say, you know, if you're fully sighted, you can see whether something's clear or not. At first, I can't do that. So I try to choose pictures that I think are high contrast because that's the way I see better. I know some of your audience members can relate to that. Black and white seems really dynamic to me, and it looks very pleasing to my eyes. I can see better with it, and I just like it. It's either black or white, whereas colors kind of blend together and stuff, and they're kind of confusing.
So you shoot a lot of your pictures in black and white then?
Yeah, 75% I will have set it on black and white mode. And other times I'll shoot color, but bring it back home and convert it to black and white.
Now, I guess in terms of the accessibility of this Sony camera, I guess you don't need to interact too much with the settings. If you have someone who's sighted, set it up in the configuration that you like. You just pick some kind of smart settings and you're all set to go. Is that right?
Yeah, that's the main way that I use my cameras. Just keep it set on auto, high contrast, black and white. And there's a flower. I might ask my mother or my son to say, hey, I think I've got this on macro, which actually does extreme close-ups. Could you make sure it's on there? They'll look and say, yeah, it's on there. So if it's on macro, I'll shoot it that way because I know that that gives a more detailed appearance.
So with a little bit of help, you're able to change the settings to match what kind of picture you want to take, but not much.
Yeah, not much help. I like to do things on my own as much as possible.
Well, and then basically using your very large monitor, you're able to sort and filter these pictures later on and perhaps crop them because you may not have pointed it in the right way.
Exactly. Yes, I don't necessarily crop when I'm composing. I don't really compose that much when I'm taking a picture. I do if it's a close-up. I can do that a little better than if it's a far away. But yeah, the major part of my photography comes later when I'm picking the ones that I like, that appeal to my sense of what art is, I think.
What tools do you use for editing your photographs?
I do use a software program. It's not accessible program or anything, but It's called Google Mic software, and that actually, I can choose filters or overlays that helps me see that better. Like a black and white I'm looking for, I'll choose the filter that really makes that black and white stand out.
Can you spell that?
Yes, Mic, N-I-K.
This large monitor you have, is this a conventional monitor that attaches to a PC, or is it some kind of CCTV magnifying system for print and other things?
Well, it's funny. What it is, it's a TV. It's just a regular large screen TV that my son attached an HDMI cord to from my PC to my TV. And that is my monitor. It doubles as a TV or my computer monitor. And he gave that to me in 2009 for a Christmas present. And that opened up art in a way like my sketching. I wasn't sketching for 10 years before he gave that to me. And I was able to sketch a little bit longer with it.
How does that work? Sketching, I assume you mean like with a pencil or charcoal on paper. What does the monitor have to do with that?
Well, because I can look at a picture on the monitor, which makes it bigger, and I can hold my paper up against it. Well, I did. I don't do that anymore because I don't see as well. But I could hold my paper up against it and could see where I was sketching a little bit better.
So you actually magnify the object that you're going to make a sketch of rather than magnifying the sketch that you're making.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Well, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just take your laptop close to the computer so you're close enough so you can see and use the monitor at the same time.
Well, I don't have a laptop. It's just my PC. The tower, those old school towers is what I have. I just stand right next to my TV and look at it. I just stand there. It's about as tall as I am. And I just stand there and look and see what's on there and try to draw it. Well, that was then. I don't do that now.
That's a very creative solution, though.
Yeah, I thought so. I wish I'd thought of it, but my son actually did. And the Sharpie markers help, too, because, you know, if you're visually impaired, sometimes you can't see the faint, sketchy lines of a pencil, but you can a dark marker, a thick marker, and that's how I was able to draw.
That's how Pete used to solve all his equations at work. He had one of those Sharpie markers and a closed-circuit television camera system.
Oh, yeah, it's great. I love Sharpies. I still use them for writing on grocery lists and writing dates on my gigantic calendar. You know, I can still see a little. That's what I wanted to sort of say on your show, too, that legally blind doesn't mean that I live in total darkness. I can't see anything. It just means I have a certain level of vision that's not very good, but it's still there. I just make the best of it. I try to use it as much as I can in different ways, like with the Sharpie and stuff and the TV.
Well, and what's really neat about what you've done, I mean, none of this involves high-tech or specialized solutions. This is all just commercial things, and you just use them to purposes that fit what you need.
Yes, I have. I think that's what the good thing about today's technology. I couldn't do this 20 years ago, probably, or maybe 10 years ago. But because all these advances keep coming out, I mean, you can find some way to do it. But yeah, you're right. It's not really high tech. It's just figuring out what you need. This works for me. It may not work for someone else with a vision problem, but I think they should give it a try.
Well, the other thing you mentioned was being legally blind doesn't mean, you know, the world is totally invisible to you. Every little bit of vision helps. And it certainly sounds like you're using what's left in your eyes to its maximum advantage to accomplish the tasks you want to accomplish and have a lot of fun.
Yeah, I spend a lot of time on the computer, and I think it might be because I use it to enlarge everything that I do, like with my emails and my surfing and reading. Now, I don't do all my reading on text. Sometimes I listen to audiobooks and stuff, but I spend a lot of time on the computer, and I find myself having to make myself get away from it to go do something else, not because I'm addicted, but because that's how I see now. A lot of what I do, I see mail that I get. I can't read with my eyes, and somebody's not here to read it, help me read it, then I can scan it and read on my computer.
Do you use any other assistive technologies on your computer, like speech synthesizers, when your eyes may be getting tired or it's just too frustrating?
Yes, I have. I switched computers recently, so I have not yet downloaded the NVDA, the non-visual desktop accessibility. Is a nice screen reader. and the voice recognition. I have used that too before. I try to do enlarge as much as I can, but that I know the day's coming. I'm going to have to switch over to audio, and I'm trying to transition right now. I have an iPad that Office for the Blind purchased for me, and I'm doing Siri, which if I tell Siri, you know, to do something like open or dictate something, and she'll. I'm trying to do everything by voice.
Well, that's a great thing to start to make the transition before you absolutely have to. So you can still go back and rely on your eyes and really large screens if you need to. Mm-hmm. But meanwhile, you can practice these other skills because you know that your eyesight isn't going to get any better.
That's true. And I'm trying to prepare myself. And it's hard to let go of the visual world, I tell you. It's not that easy. It's hard to let go of art and writing and stuff. But I keep hanging on, you know, to it as long as I can. As long as there's technology out there, I feel certain that everything will be okay.
One of my theories is that vision loss doesn't make anything easier, but it doesn't have to make everything impossible.
Right.
To be sure, it is easier to do many, many things if you have some vision. And the more vision you have, the easier it is to do it. But, you know, as long as you've been kind of going with the flow and finding ways to accommodate and do whatever it is you want to do with whatever level of vision you have, except for the folks at the social work job who didn't think you could handle it, you seem to be managing everything else okay.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, and I think the important thing is that you've kind of accepted your situation and understand the changes that are taking place. It's not like you said, geez, I'm losing my vision. I can't do anything. I have to give up the world of everything I enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
You said, look, realistically, this is what's happening, but this is how I can modify what I do and how I do it in order to enjoy the activities I've always enjoyed in life.
Yeah, and I never planned these things. They just kind of come up, like in 2013, it just dawned on me, sort of like, okay, point and shoot cameras are here. What would that be like if I even wanted to attempt it? But I did. It was the artist in me, really, to say, okay, give it a try. They may not be perfect pictures, but maybe you can use your art background and what vision you have and that TV to do it. So I guess it's working out.
Well, I'm not an artist, but I can see, and I've seen quite a number of your photographs on various websites, and I am really impressed. They're beautiful. And to be able to create photographs that are that beautiful and that well composed when you can barely see them is really impressive.
Well, some of that's due to cropping, I think, and some is my camera, which is a great camera. And, yeah, I think my art background, you know, I think I know what, at least in a basic way, what constitutes an artistic picture, what other people might like. I mean, I hope people like them.
I think they're great.
Well, thank you. I'm glad it's coming across okay. I think some of them might be blurry. They're not, you know, some people say, oh, that was blurry. Or, but that's all right because I can't tell the difference.
Well, and sometimes it's nice to know what other people see in a photo.
I love talking to people about it because they see things I don't see, and I want to hear what their interpretation is of the picture and stuff. It's not what I want them to see. Like, what do they get out of it? I want to hear from them.
And everybody has a different perspective. I did image processing at Xerox for a living, despite the fact that I was blind, and I would always have to take the images to other people to say, you know, what do you think about this picture? What do you see in this picture? And everyone saw something different. And that helped improve the results of my work to account for the diversity of people's opinions.
Well, I'm just happy to be a photographer, to be able to call myself one after all these years. It's unbelievable. I just can't believe that I'm doing it with a camera.
Well, what a wonderful story that confirms to all of us, where there's a will, there's a way.
Now for this week's final item, how you can get more information, including tips on doing photography with limited vision and how to see Tammy's work.
So if any of our listeners want to see some of your photographs, where would they go to find them?
Well, I have a portfolio where all of my photos and all my finger paintings and some of my sketches Sharpie sketches I used to do are on TammyRuggles.deviantart.com.
Can you spell that?
Yes. Well, my name, Tammy Ruggles, TammyRuggles dot deviant, deviantart.com/gallery. And it'll take you right to my gallery. Everything, all my photos are on there.
Great. So you've given us lots of advice on how people with limited vision can do photography in general and other things.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other resources where you might point people in terms of contact information or web resources that you think are useful?
If some of your listeners go to YouTube and type in, like in the search window, cameras for visually impaired photographers, that's one resource because tons of how-to videos might come up with how to use a camera for visually impaired.
If anybody wants to reach you directly, is that okay?
Oh, that is wonderful. I love hearing from people. Just my email address, TammyRuggles@yahoo.com.
And now some final thoughts from Tammy.
Don't just get the camera that I mentioned. It's a good camera, but it may not be the one that works for you. I'd say just try out a few if you can and settle for one that fits your needs. You know, because you might be able to see a big screen, or actually iPads can take pictures too, so they have a big screen. So that might be a whole different ballgame. Yeah, just try what works for you is my advice.
Well, that's great advice. There are lots of different options out there, and we all have different needs and requirements and ways of working, so we really should be cognizant of picking the right solution.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll encourage people to go to our show notes where we keep links and other resources that you heard in the show. Just go to www.eyesonsuccess.net, look at the show notes for this show, and find all of those resources.
That's it for show number 1546. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about creating a website. Many listeners have expressed an interest in learning how to create their own website, but don't know where to start. We'll speak with Mobeen Iqbal about how to do this and which tools are most accessible for use with a screen reader. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpy and Peter Torpy and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. Browse the full archive of programs, find instructions for subscribing to the podcasts, and much more at www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also find us on iTunes, follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com, at Eyes on Success, or Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success and have a nice day.